Avete bocca voi sai? Sono male in campo.
We're still in the psicha, in the preface.
English 358?
The paragraph that starts, Umitayelis Habitachan Bashem?
Yeah, yeah. But okay. We're down near the
358 in the English. Thank you. Okay, in the Feldheim English. Okay. Paragraph that starts, Umitayelis Habitachan Bashem. I'm not going to quickly read through. No, I'm sorry. We're going to move to the next paragraph, Umehen. We were discussing at length how bitachon helps a person deal with money correctly, deal with having money, deal with lack of money correctly. This is important to, I just want to frame this again with the understanding that we often talk about, often hear about money epitomizes the material, money as something mundane. Now, the truth is that money really does epitomize the material, but that doesn't necessarily give it a negative connotation. The material world is, for us, challenge presented to the Eved Hashem, to the Eved Hashem, to the servant of Hashem. We're given the material world in order to move through that challenge properly, and that is really what defines our whole purpose. Money, in a big way, is that. Sorry, just 1 minute. Money, in a big way, is that. Money can provide very, very many pitfalls on many different levels. And therefore, on the contrary, by learning to relate to money correctly, we don't turn money into something treif, as the Kuzari spells out very much, very strongly. Particularly, he adds, if a person is supposed to be raising a family, then on the contrary, it's good to have money. But money certainly does provide many challenges to our ruchnius in many different ways. And bitachon is one of the key qualities that enables a person to have a spiritually healthy relationship with money, if we'll turn it that way. Relationship with having money, relationship with not having money. Question.
Yeah. I just wanted to point out that the Lubavitcher Rebbe, way back when he just became Rebbe, I think. So he had a shir. And he asked people, who in the room would like to be wealthy? And everybody was kind of shy, like, you know, I'm from, what do I want money for? Two people raised their hand. He said, the rest of you are foolish. He blessed the two people. Now, one of them, I don't know who the other one was, Gutnick, who became one of the biggest ball pests. He said, money is a tool to be used for proper reasons. But sometimes when you're from, you think, you know, that it's kind of, it goes against, Ruchnius and Gashmius are like, that's, you know, right, counter opposed, but not necessarily.
That's right. That's a very, very good point. You just termed it very well. Gashmius in general, and money in particular, is a potential threat to Ruchnius. It's a potential threat to Ruchnius. But on the other hand, when it's harnessed properly, when it is put into the service of Ruchnius properly, then the money, and again, whenever I talk about money, I'm stressing at the same point, the presence of it or the lack of it can be very, very chashiva tools in us reaching our highest levels in Hashem's service. So now, as we said before, bitachon is a key here. When it comes to having the right relationship with money, bitachon is a key. In what ways? So here I'm just going to recap what we've seen. That itself is a pitfall, because often when I talk about recapping, we end up spending a full two shiurim on it. But okay, you've grown accustomed to that. What are the pitfalls? What are the challenges that bitachon can help you navigate? So first of all, it's the ability to part with money when you understand that that's Ratzon Hashem. That's number one. The ability to part with money is part of the purpose of money. It's part of why Hashem made money into such a powerful force in our lives. Part of that great challenge is, as a loyal servant of mine, are you capable of parting with it when I want you to? So this is something that you can go one of two routes. Either you go the route of hisgabrus, overcoming, even though it's so hard, I'm going to part with it. Or you go the other route, which is more work, but ultimately makes it easier. You go the bitachon route. When a person has really been, now I have to stress, it doesn't work by when you're suddenly faced with the challenge to have a crash course, take one day and pack in 16 shiurim on bitachon and out. No, bitachon is a lifetime career. You're trying to be developing it all the time. One of the benefits is that it will put you into position of being ready to say, it's easy for me. When you put in all the hard work in developing the bitachon, when you actually come to that crossroads, so you say, since I really feel confident that Hashem is taking care of me, I can let go of that money, and where Hashem wants me to be, I'll be. Okay, now I want to stress also when we talk about it being easy. Bitachon is a lifelong career. It's a lifelong career of getting used to the ideas, of really trying to internalize them. And there are many degrees. If it's a little bit of a struggle, but less of a struggle than it would have been had you never been really exposed to the concept of bitachon in depth, you have made very great progress. If it makes it a little bit easier for you to let go, because I feel that I'm trying to muster up all that knowledge that I have about how Hashem will take care of me, that is already great progress. Okay, well, but I'm reminding myself, this is a recap, right? So, that's number one, the ability to part with it. The ability to relate properly to not having it. And then, one of the challenges of money is that money, and this is what we ended with last week, I believe, money can become an obstruction to Hashem. When a person has the money he needs, so he feels like he's taken care of, and that sense of dependence on Hashem can start drifting away. So part of the challenge of bitachon, this is what we've been calling the other side of the coin of bitachon. Part of the challenge of bitachon is to be able to continue sensing that you depend on Hashem, that you're in Hashem's hands, even when you feel that you are taken care of. To remember, I'm taken care of because Hashem is taking care of me from one moment to the next, not because now I'm okay and if I need Hashem, I'll get in touch. So that's the next challenge. Will money obstruct your sense of depending on Hashem? And here again, you need bitachon. You need to work on bitachon. Bitachon, again, doesn't mean... Bitachon means that feeling of being in the best of hands, feeling secure in the knowledge of Hashem's hands, which is relevant. We mainly talk about it when you're facing a challenging situation, but it's equally relevant, and it's even, perhaps on its even more refined level, when you're not facing a challenging situation, to still be holding on to that feeling that, why am I okay? Because I'm in Hashem's hands, because He's taking care of me, because He's doing what's best for me. Okay.
Yeah. About the parting with it. Question.
Okay, yes.
As we try to build up, as I try to build up my parting with it muscle. So, you know, it comes along, we're out in front of the Tachin Merkaz Yid of Yerushalayim, we've got all the people with their hands out, and, you know, am I going to give them? Am I not going to give them? Am I going to give them a shekel? Am I giving them a five shekel? So I can build up my own muscle. Where does... where do I put my questions? Is that person legitimate? Does he really have, you know, the car that, you know, the expensive car that he's gotten from, you know, is he an Arab?
The proverbial car that everybody collecting has.
Right.
The mansion that they all own and the, yeah. Okay.
Exactly. So or is he using it for smoking cigarettes that I don't believe? Whatever it is, you know, all those questions that come up in my mind. How do I balance that?
So here's the question. Question is, when we talk about developing, the way you put it was, the muscle of being able to part with the money because of my sense of security, my sense of calm, my sense that I'm being taken care of, how do I then go and apply appropriately? You're not supposed to just be throwing your money around and not really taking care to see where it goes to. So we'll start by saying, start with the places that it's clear. Meaning, often, tzedakah is only one example. There are many situations where applying the standard of halacha that you really realize objectively is the right standard will require you to pay more money, whether it's in areas of Shabbos, Yom Tov. Yom Tov is a very classic example. I'm sorry?
Kashrus.
That's right. Many areas of halacha, which, Shemitah, that's right. Many areas of halacha which you will determine based on how much money you want to spend. So if you decide this is the level of halacha that I should be keeping, that's first and foremost where it comes into play. Right? Where the, okay, if so, I'm ready to let go. Or outside of the realm of halacha, when there is something that you see clearly, this is really the right thing to do, just it's a question of money. Can we come back to that example of Rav Milinowitz, who was mamish that, like, you know, something came up. If he pulled out his pen, right? Pulled out his pen, or he pulled out his money just in order to move what needed to be moved. That's first and foremost. Then there's the question of, so how do you decide when you should be giving money? So here, we've said this a few times, when it comes to tzedakah, your main tzedakah giving should be proactive, not reactive. Meaning, you want to decide, what do I want to be giving my tzedakah money for, and seeking out those causes. That's the big one. Let's say, I'm just throwing out a number now. Let's say you're going to be giving 1,000 shekel of tzedakah a month. Okay? Let's say that's what you're going to be giving. So it doesn't mean you're not going to be walking around with 1,000 single shekels in your pocket. And then if I don't bump into 1,000 people, then at the end of the month, I'll give 799 to the last person who approaches me. You want your tzedakah to be primarily proactive. 1,000 shekel for tzedakah, I want to make good investments. What are those worthwhile investments? Consult, figure it out, and then see, okay, where are good addresses for giving that money? Supporting Torah should be at the top of the list. Supporting straightforward tzedakah should be at the top of the list. Now, there are, Baruch Hashem, plenty of addresses where you know that the tzedakah is being handled in a professional way. You have your local tzedakah organizations, very, very fine quality addresses, or other needs that there are objective ones that should be at the top of the list. And then you might have subjective preferences as to things. You want to make sure that they are, you know, they carry the Torah value that they should carry. But, you know, youth is something close to my heart, and I want to invest there. Here also, it's very easy to find good, solid addresses where you know that your money will be well utilized, and that's where you want the bulk of your tzedakah money to go. Other than that, when you're talking about the people who approach you, allocate a small amount to that. Where you can respond, it's more like there's a special din in tzedakah. There's all kinds of dinim of how to prioritize. And then there's a din called Al Yashar Dach Nichlam. A person should not be turned away in shame. Now, that is not where the bulk of your money goes. That you have an amount of money in your pocket, whatever it is, you give a shekel, a half a shekel, 2 shekel, however you'll define it. Maybe you'll put it at 10 shekel and kol hakavod. That for you constitutes, someone approached me, I want to respond in a nice way. But again, where do you really want your tzedakah money going? You want it going to those addresses where you know. It can also be, it doesn't have to be an organization, it can be a family that you know from up close, that this is a very worthy place to be giving my money. Whatever it is. But the main money should be in the addresses that you're proactively deciding on, that's a general guideline. Of course, when it comes down to the particulars, you consult and figure it out on an individual basis. But does that answer the question sufficiently? Okay.
Rob Milinowitz once said to me that you should ideally give half of your proactive amount, okay, whatever you set aside, half to Torah and half to, like, Ani. Have you ever heard of that? Is that?
There are, the precise configuration will vary from, but the concept certainly. Uh-huh. Torah, Aniim. You'll also be told that Gemach is a good place to invest in. But also, I want to stress.
Gemach Tyra, isn't for Maser, is it?
What's that? You actually could, yeah.
You could?
Yeah, if you dedicate money, this is going to be set aside regularly for lending.
So you're giving it to the Gemach. You're not expecting to get it back.
Or you're allocating it. Money that I'm going to lend to people when I'm approached. It's probably more simple to do it through an established Gemach. Yeah. But The Chofetz Chaim very much recommends that. I think he says to use a third of Yitzhak money, but whatever it is, it doesn't matter exactly. It doesn't matter exactly. But yes, there are things that we know objectively are priority. And also, in terms of Yitzhak itself, there's priority. There's family, there's local. It's very important to realize that local comes before. You can have all kinds of things that are coming up, sensational things that you're hit with, etc. First is local, right? That comes, family comes first, local comes first. And also, Torah and Anim often come together. The highest form of tzedakah is supporting needy people who are learning and need that support. So, yeah, you have the general idea. Exactly how you put the percentages, it's only a question of whether you're making a billion here or a billion there. But it's all, these are all good investments. Okay. Now, but now I want to move on here in this paragraph. Okay, so we said that the person who has true bitachon, when he has money, it does not obstruct him from that sense of being in Hashem's hands. That's where my security comes from. It doesn't come from the money that I do have now available to me in my bank account. My security comes from Hashem. And at the moment, he's giving me this money to use. Maybe for next month, he'll have a different way of supporting me. So, and now I want to continue. This is what we're really up to. When a Baal Bitachon has money, he doesn't view it as, all right, now I've incorporated this into myself, and this is mine. No. When he has money that he's not instantly using right now for supper, or for rent, or for the electricity bill, so he views it as a pikadon. It's something that he was told to hold on to. Hashem gave it to him and told him, hold on to this. What should I do with it? I'm not telling you yet. I'll let you know as we go along what I have in mind with it. Maybe I'll ask you to give it back. Maybe I'll tell you to give it there. Maybe I'll just let you use it for yourself. That's how he views extra money. So, Tzival Yishtamish Ba'al Panam Yuchadim. U'binyanim Yuchadim. This man Katsu. Hashem says, here, I'm giving you this money. I have particular things that I want you to use it for. It's not yours. I know. It came to you through a wonderful investment that you made. But no, I'm handing this to you. It isn't yours. There are a few things that I want you to do with it. I want you to give $10,000 to that institution. This person, here's Hashem telling him that. Not because he's a Navi, but because he understands that this is, if he has this kind of money, this is the right thing to do. So he sees in that the voice of Hashem. And that's what Hashem gave him the money for, right? Or for, like we said before, all the different halachic requirements, etc. It's man kotzov, and also Hashem tells it, he hears, when he gets this money, he takes it as, I'm not necessarily giving this to you in an open-ended way. I'm giving it to you for a certain amount of time. Hashem, how long? I'll let you know. So Mamish holding it with an attitude of safeguarding it. If it turns out that a few years down the line, it's all still there, that doesn't cause him to kick. Kick really is an expression which means he doesn't lose sight of Hashem. That's really what it means. He doesn't lose sight of Hashem. Meaning, it's not that as he grows accustomed to having that money at his disposal, at his fingertips, so his need for Hashem starts becoming vaguer and vaguer and drifting away. That doesn't happen when a person is a Baal Bitachon. It's not. This is not easy. This is a challenge of bitachon. A challenge of bitachon for the person who is set up properly, right? But it also goes more than that. Since he's viewing it as something that Hashem told, gave it to him, and said, "I'm going to tell you what to do with this." This is mamish an amazing thing. When he gives tzedakah, tzedakah we were talking about, let's say, so he doesn't feel like, wow, I'm taking some of my money and I'm sharing it with you. No, the way he views it is, Hashem told him, can you pass this to that person? He takes it from Hashem and passes it. That's how he's relating to it. When he gives tzedakah, that's how he's relating to it. So he's not making sure to stress to the recipients. Remember where this came from, right? Remember who's giving you that X amount of money a month. He doesn't expect the recognition, doesn't expect the praise. Now that person should express that recognition, should express his gratitude. But as far as the the benefactor goes, it's not a factor. It's not part of his thinking. Rather, rather, when he gives that money, his feeling is one of gratitude to Hashem for having put him into this position, for having put him into the position to be a conduit of Hashem's aid to others. And if all of a sudden one day that money disappears, a bad investment, whatever it was that happened, he won't be concerned. Again, we have to remind ourselves. Chavos HaMavos is exposing us to the highest levels here. If it's over our heads, Dayeno, it's enough for us to try to hammer in these concepts in order to feel it a little bit. We have to keep reminding ourselves that.
Like he did something wrong, or like.
Oh, how do you relate? When a person does suffer a loss, so the Chavos HaMavos is describing here, now let's finish the Chavos HaMavos' description here, and then contrast that with what you just asked. So he's not concerned, he doesn't worry about the loss. He thanks Hashem, oh, you took it now? Okay, thank you for letting me hold on to it for these 10 years and to use it for what I wanted. The same way he thanked for when he got it in the first place. He's happy with his lot. He's not looking to harm anybody. Where does that come in here? Well, where it comes in here is because any of his business is done without that competitive edge. Because he's very clear, keenly sensing, I'm not making money. I'm going through certain motions. Hashem is providing me what he wants to provide me with. Okay, so now the question that was raised was, perhaps a person should relate to it. Well, I mean, the Chavos HaMavos is almost describing a nonchalant attitude. Like, oh, okay, want me to have it until now? Now not. Well, perhaps he lost the money as a result of something wrong that he did. So the truth is that this comes back to the general discussion of how do you relate to misfortune. How do you relate to misfortune? So the truth is that I would think that it's true. There's a certain clause. The Chavos HaMavos is not really breaking it down here now. He breaks it down in other places. There should be a certain cheshbon nefesh that's made. But the truth is, we will never really know anything that comes our way. We'll never really know precisely what the cause is. Right? And therefore, we're always, however we're relating to it, we have guidelines to how to relate to it, which we want to go about in a serious way. And part of that is, yes, considering, is there something that I may have done that caused this, which involves making a serious accounting of, was there anything nida kineged nida? Or, in general, is there some fault in my life that Hashem is trying to draw my attention to? That has to be approached in a serious way. But at the same time, you're also taking into account that that might not be why it happened. It simply might be because Hashem is giving you the opportunity to prove yourself in this way also. That is sometimes why misfortune happens. We discussed that at length earlier. And it's going to come up again in Shara B'Toch. We'll see how very often misfortune do not negate the possibility that it is a call, a wake-up call to something. Don't negate that possibility. People are too quick. It's very the political correct. So I have the term, I got a term that I think it's called emotionally correct. Everybody's good. Everybody's great. Anything that happens to anybody is something happening to a good person who didn't deserve it. And therefore, how do we understand misfortune happening to good people who didn't deserve it? Let's not be so quick to jump to that. Are we all really that great? There's no room. We should not so easily gloss over that stage of, you know what, there probably are things in my life that I can improve. And even that's stated in a gentle way, because there are things in our lives that we can improve. So not to gloss over that stage, not to quickly jump to, oh, wow, I am the epitome of the righteous person suffering. But at the same time, we do both. We understand it as a wake-up call We understand that it's a call for introspection. That's always a good idea. You'll always tend to profit. And if you're conscientious, you always will find something. You'll always find something to improve. At the same time, you also relate to it as something that is a standalone Nisayan. Hashem is saying, I'm sending you this challenge because of the greatness that you can gain, the growth that you can gain by going through this, which ultimately will have made it well worth your while. Okay. So here we finished, if you remember, the broader context here, we have been, he's been delineating the benefits of bitachon for your spirituality, the spiritual benefits of bitachon. Now we're moving on to the next stage. What are the material benefits of bitachon? So, achtoy alois habitachon ba'olam, the material benefits of bitachon, mehen. One of them is minuchas halev min habi'ogos ha'olamiyos. A person's mind is at ease. He is not burdened by stresses. Many standard concerns don't really penetrate that deeply. He lives a life of serenity, lives a life of comfort. People often tend, we stressed this back at the beginning, people often tend to take the whole concept of bitachon straight to this. It's a coping mechanism, right? When a person is going through a hard time, they want to hear about bitachon, which is very important. But we want to remember that this is coming late in the Cheres Halavos' discussion. We want to remember that first and foremost, bitachon is part of your relationship with Hashem. It's meant to be a lifetime career. No matter what your state is, it's something that you need, whether you're in a situation of need or whether you're in a situation of plenty. You need it for your spiritual welfare. That's number one. You need to be, so if you have real emunah, if Hashem is something real in your life, that should lead to that sense of, I am in the best of hands. And as we said, it's an issue of having the correct relationship with Hashem. You know, I'll put it this way. It's an issue of menschlichkeit toward Hashem. He's taking care of you in so many ways to feel, I trust him. That's first and foremost. And he also listed that as benefit number one of bitachon in the spiritual realm. That's reason number one. Reason number one, why do you need bitachon? Is because Hashem wants you to trust him. That's reason number one. But now we're approaching the material part of it. He's telling you, which is in general a theme that threads the whole Cheres Halavos, you should know that living the way Hashem wants you to will also provide you with the optimal material life. And here, bitachon epitomizes that, because bitachon enables a person to comfortably move through any situation that comes his way, to really be completely serene, tranquil, content with whatever his state in life is, because he has that very, very clear feeling that Hashem is deciding this. Hashem loves me intensely. He knows better for me what's good for me. And this is how he set it up. And sometimes think of it as when you're davening, let's say, for the extra money you need. Right? So you think to yourself, you're davening, Hashem is listening to you with a warm smile, with love. And in his hand, he's holding $1 trillion. And you're asking him for 2,000, right? And he's listening to you with love. And now he's going to decide whether he should give you 2,000 or not. Hashem has no problem getting a hold of it, right? You have to really, really internalize quite how able he is, right? That's one of the 7 points that the Cheres Halavos stresses. It's all there. But his only consideration is his love for you and what's best for you. And therefore, by not giving it to you, he's telling you, it's not good for you. It's not good for you. Or I should put it more accurately, the not having it is best for you. The not having it is very good for you. That's That's the more important stress than that having it is not good for you. That's not really the point. Really, the point is exactly what I gave you and exactly where I drew the line and exactly what I didn't give you is exactly what your neshama needs. Not only that, it might be what you need, but you'll only figure it what you need in the physical realm, but you might only realize that in 4 years from now, or you might benefit from it without even ever putting together the picture. But this, Hashem is saying, I'm taking into account not only what you're feeling right now, I'm taking into account your neshama, which you're completely unaware of. I'm taking into account also the whole plan, the full span of your 150 years, not just now. I'm busy planning 45 years from now also when I'm deciding exactly what to give you when. You have no way of doing that. Trust me. Okay. The next one. Shlomeihem. Now here is where we get to the sugya of where do we draw the line in our hishtadlus. Here's what we're going to see. The Chavis Havav is going to be giving a few examples of that. Now, I'm going to stress before we start seeing this that when it really comes down to halacha lemaisa in these realms, it has to very much be addressed on an individual basis. But the Chavis Havav is going to be giving us broad strokes. Let's expose ourselves to the way of thinking. And that is this. A person will confidently and comfortably refuse to go on long journeys. It does a person in physically and it shortens a person's life. In other words, the Chavis Havav is putting down one of his rules of thumb. That you draw the line at if you can't find parnas in your area, and it will mean having to travel long distance, it's not what Hashem expects. You just say, that's where I'm drawing the line. What Hashem wants me to have, I'll have. This is not what Hashem expects of me. Now, I want to stress that travel in those days obviously meant something very different than it means in our time. Right? Then travel meant you left your home for 8-9 months at a time if it was a short business trip, and you spent a quarter to a third of that time at sea, in the desert, exposing yourself to dangers, etc. It was very, very, and even besides the danger, it was inevitably arduous. It was inevitably worn you down physically. Yeah, and right. So the Chavis Havav is making the point that hishtadlus is very important, but it is not at the absolute top of the list. Hashem doesn't expect it in all circumstances. It's very important to remember, why are we doing hishtadlus? Because Hashem said, you have to take care of your panasa? Or because Hashem said, no, I'm still taking care of your panasa, but there are emotions that I want you to go through up to a certain point. So he says that when it comes to a life up, even if the reality of long distance travel is not the same now as it was then, the concept of understanding that Hashem says, you don't, my expectation of you to the ishtadlis does not mean sacrificing your health, sacrificing doing things that are certainly going to be shortening your life. No, here I expect you to say, this is not what Hashem wants of me. Where is my parnasa going to come from? That's up to Hashem. And if he wants me to go through a month or two of lack, that's what he wants right now. But this is not what he expects of me. He does not expect me to do myself in this way.
Here's a question. So people in the States make great money. Then they want to make aliyah. But the only way that they can continue to support their families here in Israel is traveling. So they go back and forth. You know, husbands go back for a couple weeks at a time and then come back here. Now, if they stayed in America, they wouldn't have to travel at all. So they're deciding to come here to make Aliyah. And the expense of it is having to support their family by traveling. And they couldn't get a comparable job here, you know, that would support their family. What would you say about that?
A question is being asked about a very classic example, particularly for people who have moved from Chutz Laaretz to Eretz Yisrael. Where a person and is considering moving to Eretz Yisrael, he's not going to be able to find the same level of parnasa. He's going to have to maintain his job there, and he's going to have to travel back and forth. So the truth is, my take here might be a little bit unpopular, but the hashkafa that I was mekabel mirabbi Yisai, that's actually Gemara, is that parnasa is definitely a factor when considering to make ayah. Sometimes it sounds like almost like sacrilegious to say that. What do you mean? You're talking, again, it comes back to money being something tummy, right? You're considering parnasa a factor when you're talking about making aliyah? Yeah, we do. We do. And we consider chinuch a factor. We consider many things a factor. It's not an all-out given. It's something that has to be weighed very carefully. Now, should a person come to Eretz Yisrael when it's going to mean that he's going to have to commute back to America? So that very, very much depends on the individual. For some people, the answer will be no, stay in America. For some people, the answer will be you'll have a different job here that won't make quite as much, but you'll be able to support your family reasonably, right? And for some people, the answer will be, for a person like you, with your family reality, commuting will work fine. So it's very, very individual. It is very individual, but it's certainly something that has to be weighed carefully. And yes, there is such a thing as a person saying, it's going to disrupt the equilibrium of my family to do that, and therefore I'm not making the move. It's something that has to be carefully considered, very carefully and weightily considered on an individual basis, and often with good guidance from people who can help you on all levels. I'm not just talking about a rav. I'm talking about really making good research into how the reality will play out, etc. But certainly also from a rav who's close with you, whatever it is. But yes, that certainly can play into the consideration. If I'll have to be traveling back and forth, maybe that's something that I can't handle. And it's very different. There are people who can do it, no skin off their nose, family is fine. And for them, why not? Okay. He illustrates it like this. He says there was a pious man. That he went to a faraway land to seek parnasa. I'll just say the story outside. He traveled far away and he came to some primitive place. The pagans worshiping all kinds of figurines. And he came into discussion with one of the locals of the area, and he said, how can you people, so this person was an intelligent person. He said to this person, how can you be so backward to really still be into these beliefs? So the person said, so what do you believe? He said, I believe in Hashem. It was Hashem. He said, Hashem, hayochal amechal ke lo'echad amatrif Hashem kamayu. He's the all-capable, all-encompassing God. So this pagan said to him, what you're doing contradicts what you're saying. So he said, what do you mean? So he said, you're talking about the all-capable, all-encompassing? If so, he's perfectly capable of getting your panosa without you having traveled across the world. He could have gotten it to you there. So it says, Nifsakotana Saparush, this pious man was shut up, right? He was silenced. Mishavla outside. And he returned back home. He kind of lowered his head, turned around, went back home with his tail between his legs. He took the lesson home. He didn't leave his town afterwards. So that's example number one of the Chavis Alvavis Shita, where he's saying to draw the line is long distance travel. This is something that he says is physically unhealthy, will shorten life, and therefore you draw the line there. Similarly, Menuchas hanefesh v'aguf, he will not involve himself in menamaisim makoshim amlochas amiyagas es agufas, in work of a nature that will wear a person down. Now, this certainly does not mean that a person says, I have to work hard. That's taking yishtadlis too far. No, you got to work hard. You have to work hard. You have to be a hustler. That's what Rabbi Vigdor Miller always used to say. Hashem wants you to be a hustler. If working hard is not within your nature, then you have to change your nature. That's just that period. But we're talking about a person who's ready to put in the efforts. But we're talking about something that is the only job of his is an intelligent, capable person. The only job available for him is to mine coal, you know, deep in the depths. And if this guy, you know, he needs help carrying the garbage out. And now he's going to go and he's going to put himself into this. It's the only thing available now. That's the only thing available now, which is simply something that you physically can't handle. Then you say, okay, Hashem doesn't expect this of me. I'm going to let go and put myself into Hashem's hands. Another thing he says is, this is very, very profound. This shtadlus does not require you to get yourself into a position where you are involved in a political mess, not to be in the royal court with all of the intrigue and all of the scheming, and you have to constantly be looking out for backstabbers. This is also something he says. Don't get yourself into these dirty realms or these types of situations where it's just a constant stress of intrigue, of backstabbing, etc. You can allow, if that's the only thing available, you can say, no, I want what Chazal called Avodah Kala Nekiya, simple and clean, straightforward. Okay, we're really just opening the topic here. So certainly don't consider it that we've seen the topic yet. We really introduced the basic ideas here. Mitzvah Hashem, we'll see more next week.
Thank you very much.
Yeshakaya, Rabbi.